that photo you mentioned of All Ireland Morning.
Yeah.
What's so interesting in that same piece I mentioned that Dave Walsh wrote just 2 or 3 years ago is he mentions your mother, Margaret, sent him a letter.
Mm-hmm.
And on the Saturday night, she drove to Dublin, bought an early copy of the Sunday paper.
Yeah, we were always doing that.
Read it under the streetlights of the GPO to see what her son had to say about her other son.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is such an arresting image.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? I love that image. And I'd somewhat forgotten about that. That's one of the gifts that my bumping into David gave me, because he brought that image back.
Do you remember your mother saying to you?
No, because they did it all the time. You see, in those days there was no internet. There was no internet. There was no immediate access to any media. So if you knew, not even if I gave an interview, families would from Mead would go up to Dublin, normally the GPO, and buy their Sunday papers so they could read about the match the next day. It'd be the first edition of the paper, of the Sunday papers. But they wanted to get there fast, so they'd be up in Dublin. And my mum and dad would do that all the time,
right,
before a Leinster final or an All-Ireland final. But I'd forgotten that they would have done it before that All-Ireland. And I'd forgotten they would have done it, especially because they would have known that I'd spoken to David Walsh. And I would have alerted my mother, especially, to the fact that that I'd spoken to David about Gerard.
Yeah. You know. Was she pleased that you had?
Oh, she's delighted, yeah. I mean, she loves me. You know, I have a difficulty talking to my mother about Gerard, and over the years I wasn't very responsive whenever she brought him up, and it's like we're talking about 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
It's just something I can't do, physically I can't do. There must be some PTSD form of something going on, because I never got therapy, you know, after Gerard died. You know, I'm 21 and I find the body in our local football field, and I never did therapy, you know what I mean? And I should have done it, and I still would benefit from it. Mm. I actually am having my first therapy session on Tuesday, not because of that, but it's always something I've wanted to do. So, because I'd closed off a lot. So, with Gerard, I mean, it's I can talk to you about it, and I can talk to David Walsh about it. But if I'm talking to my mother, emotions come in that I get very tight, and different emotions come in that I don't like. All about the scene and the happening and the event and his, you know, taking of his own life, because he took his own life in an horrific manner. And so you don't want to go back there with her, unfortunately. And it's funny, myself, my dad, I've said this once before, like, you know, 20 years after Gerard died, before my dad died, he survived Gerard by 20 years. Like, we never spoke about Gerard once. I never brought Gerard up with him, and he never brought Gerard up with me. And that's the Irish male at work. Do you know what I mean? Or the male generally at work, you know what I mean? And women are different, and a mother is different. But yeah, I couldn't be there for my mum, which is a pity, but there's nothing I could do about it. But I could do it in other ways. And I think, giving you an awful long answer here.
No, keep
me
talking
to David Walsh about it in that Sunday morning of the All-Ireland final was me, you know, probably reaching out to her, and nobody else really, reaching out to her. So it's great he mentioned the GPO, because I had forgotten that she would have been up under the lights. And she's a small little woman. If you knew my mum, she's about 4'10". She's a tiny little woman, and the bravest, happiest woman you'll ever find.
She's still alive, Liam.
Yeah, she is, yeah. She's 92, 93 now. Right. And to have the image of her at 4'10", under the lights of the GPO reading, probably in the car, but reading, she probably would have read it very, very quickly, I would imagine.
The most interesting word you used there is that you said, I physically couldn't engage.
Oh yeah, no, it's a physical thing, it's not a mental thing. It's like a physical thing, like you just can't engage, you know what I mean?
Leave the room?
No, I would just end a conversation. I wouldn't give anything back. She would get nothing back from me. And she would know what after about 60 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you suspect was going on with your late father during those years where your mother is almost counselling anyone who needs it, and your father can't mention the name to his...
Yeah, he would be supportive of her, but he wouldn't want to talk about it himself, you know, and certainly not to me, and I certainly wouldn't want to talk to him. I mean, you know, he would travel to screen matches, our club matches. You know, I was living at home as one of those Irish guys. I lived at home till I got married at 28, so I was living at home most of my career.
Right.
My dad would go to most matches with me, and, you know, we would never talk about that. But I think it's like something... when you, like, the football field in Screen, where Gerard died, is about 400 yards from our house. So it was our playground. We would be there every day of our lives. So by road, it's about 400 yards. Or you can go to the bottom of our garden at Holman's Green and you can go across the field, which the journey Jared took that night when he took his life. And you can reach the football field by about 200-yard dash, right? So, like, for me, at that stage, when Jared died in 83, Sean Bolan is just coming into the Mead setup. Mead aren't likely to win anything. I spoke to you a moment about, like, there was no thought of even beating Dublin. We'd lost the previous first round, the previous three Leinster championships. So, but for me, it was about Screen. It was about the football pitch. It was about the blue jersey of Screen. I had a decision to make. You know, was I going to go back to that field to play for Screen, to train for Screen? And that's what I decided I had to do. So, I mean, I did that for 10 years, you know, on dark nights and bad nights and windy, rainy nights, the same sort of night in which I would have found Jared in that field. But I made the decision that I had to, literally... But what happened in a box and close it and lock it and put it away, because I had to physically, like, in rural Ireland at that stage and particularly, you know, in the 80s, there was no money in the country, you know, there wasn't a lot, and if you were playing football and enjoying your football in rural Ireland then, or hurling, and that was your life, so very hard to walk away from it no matter what happened. So I decided, you know, I have to be here. So to do that, I'm being an amateur psychologist now, to do that, I think you have to really lock something away.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing that's what I did, you know.
To wind in the tangent, the best sports drama, show, series, we got nothing here. Ted Lasso is about the best anyone managed.
Dream Team's better than that, surely.
I put Friday Night Lights across and you just disparaged it.
Dick Moran used to go to Greystones games in Glen Road, does that count?
Dick Moran
used to wear his green and white scarf and go to Greystones games.
I haven't heard the AOL Dick Moran from Glen Row in a long time.
Greystones were Division 1 back then, though, you know.
Jeez. Oh god. Does that count?
You've now started an argument over his Glen Row even in the top Irish TV shows.
Oh, jeez.
All right.
Break.
No. Pete, don't go to break.
We've got the thumbnail sorted with Dick.
Okay, I'm back. Dara has sent in an email.
You know, we value girls' sports more perhaps than we did in years gone by. And in terms of keeping our girls in sports, it's something that's really necessary, because we know the drop-off rates for teenagers. We know boys as well also drop out of sports, but they drop out at a much higher rate than girls do. So it's really something that we have to tackle. Orla will know more than me that there are lots of reasons why girls drop out of sports. But, you know, periods play a role in girls', I suppose, difficulties around sports at particular times of the month.
Yeah, because your piece, Jen, makes the point, having spoke to different stakeholders, I suppose, that fears of leaking, cramps and inability to use tampons yet, just some of the reasons parents give when you asked if their daughters missed out on playing sports. And there's a really interesting quote even from Trish Kearney, who we've spoken to on the show and people will know, a swimming coach, a very competitive swimmer as well in her day. And she said, in my opinion, the young girls at risk of giving up sport are those who see tampons as something they find too difficult to cope with. In school swimming, parents will skip swimming for their daughters quicker than advising about tampons. Why? I think it's an ideal opportunity for an open discussion if they've not had one. Now, I think, honestly, there'll be a lot of men listening going, oh, is there an issue with tampons?
I wonder, I suppose it's, I mean, maybe if it comes down to, well, men know the difference between different period products. I mean, for tampons, with a very young girl, I can understand a lot of parents won't be keen maybe to introduce tampons to their younger daughters. And again, going back to the idea that, or to the fact that girls are getting their periods a little bit younger, it's a big thing for a girl to get her head around. I mean, all of us as we were growing up, and all of us when we started using tampons, it was a much bigger deal at the beginning to start using tampons as opposed to pads. a lot of mothers also, when they answered me on this, they said that they had their own difficulties using tampons and they were probably fearful of making it an issue for their children.
They're more invasive, clearly.
They're more invasive. Yeah. You know, you put them inside you. So it's a bigger deal, the idea of asking a little girl to do that. It's very different. And it's, you know, they're already, particularly if they're very young and they're 10 and 11 and they're trying to get their heads, or 12, trying to get their heads around, I now have to, I'm going to bleed every single month.
Yes.
The idea of doing something like this, putting the tampon inside, can be off-putting. Trish is right, you know, the idea, you know, that if we can get girls using tampons, we're more likely to keep them in sports, particularly things like swimming. But doing that at such a young age, it's not quite as straightforward as that. Now, there are other solutions. We've got period underwear now and period swimwear, and there are other things that will help hugely to keep, to allow girls to continue in sports. But tampons, I suppose, for most women in sports, or for most women as in terms of any kind of degree of freedom, that tampons will give them more freedom than,
as opposed to pads.
But again, age is a huge factor, and girls are fearful. You know, young girls are quite fearful. They're quite nervous. They're trying to get used to this without the idea of now putting something inside them. It's a difficult one, because I don't know of many children that age, or many parents who have children that age, whose daughters would be comfortable using tampons quite so young.
Mm. Orla, what's your perspective on that?
Yeah, and I suppose, like as Jen kind of alluded to, young girls that are getting periods kind of almost younger now, you know, some girls are even getting periods at the age of 9, 8, 9, 10. So it can be very overwhelming, and it can be very daunting, and that fear element. And I suppose, based on my own research, one of the big barriers that came through as a physical activity and sport barrier was that of a kind of body image. You know, girls, preteens particularly, and teenagers, they're very conscious of, you know, their bodily images, what their friends think, and it can be a big barrier as it is, not even a mind just being on their period, but just body conscious anyway. So I can't imagine, you know, at that age, in school, and having to actually think about tampons and think about, you know, playing sport as well. Like it can be a massive worry, and you know, it is something that needs to be talked about, and something that needs to be kind of made aware in schools and in clubs as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a conversation we've ever had in this show.
Mm.
Tampons, pads, what's the right thing to do?
Yeah,
it's normalizing it. You see,
yeah,
it's that's the thing. Like,
and you know,
the more vocal we are, the more. Mm-hmm. You can normalise it as well. So.
It's not that difficult a conversation either. I mean, it's all very practical and worth having. I mean,
here's a quote you don't read every day. If it weren't for table tennis, I'd be dead or in jail now. You grew up in the housing projects in Brooklyn. Table tennis was not on your radar, not a big part of your life. Probably it's fair to say the high school student, Wally Green, would have looked at table tennis with a fair degree of contempt.
That's exactly correct.
So tell us a bit about that upbringing then, because I suspect it's very different from mine or most people's.
Yeah, so I grew up in the projects. My parents really didn't have any money. My mom and dad divorced at, I don't have any picture in my mind of my mom and dad together. So probably when I was, before I was one, and she married an abuser, a guy who used to beat her up all the time. And, you know, and it was really tough. It was a crazy life. You know, I spend most of my life trying to figure out how I could kill this guy who's beating up my mom. And I think that's pretty crazy for a kid, you know, from the age of 5 to be thinking about every day of what I could do to get rid of this person. And that led me to, you know, gangs and guns at an early age. You know, by 13, I already owned 6 guns. It was gangbanging at 13 in the streets, because that was where my family was. That was where I thought was my family, right? Because those were people that I could always reach out to, those people I could always talk to, right? Nobody was telling me that I was gonna be nothing or that I was gonna be dead or in jail for life, even though that was the road that we were all going. But no one was saying that, right? Everyone was just kind of like trying to help each other out, you know, as a team.
And was he still around in your teenage years when you had a gun? Because I'm sure you contemplated shooting him.
He never left. I don't know, man. My mom just I don't know. But yeah. Even when I was in gangs, he was still around. Many times, there was one in particular time where my stepfather was actually grabbing my mom one day, like around her throat, and they were arguing, and I turned around, right? And my stepfather turned around and said to me, if you look over here one more time, you're going to get the same thing. And I just lost it. Like I just lost it. Like all I remember is I came back in the house with a gun. I don't even remember how I got out of the house. I know I went to my friend's house to get it because that's where we used to keep it, but I came back in with a gun, and I was going to shoot my stepfather that day. And I was shaking, and I was, you know, I was all these emotions going through my mind. And as I put the gun to his face, and I said that, you know, you've been doing this for a long time and I'm going to end it right now. And then my mom was screaming and yelling. And then my mom calls the police and says, you guys need to hurry. My son's trying to kill my husband. And then I pointed the gun to my mom as well. And I was about to kill my parents at that point. But, you know, I've always been a smart kid. I've always been smart. And something came, I always talk about this, something came and sat on my shoulder and all this craziness said to me, hey, if you do this right now, everything your stepfather said will happen right now. My stepfather told me as a kid, every day, oh, you're going to be dead or in jail. You're worthless. You're worthless. You're going to be dead or in jail. You're going to be dead or in jail. And this is what I heard every day. And so something told me that if you do this right now, this is what's going to happen. Whatever he said, everything he said is going to come true. And then I just came to my senses and I said, you guys deserve each other, and left home and never went back.
They've really wore their hair in their knees and they've done it.
History. History is made by the Republic of Ireland. They are going to the World Cup Finals. Louise Quinn jumps for joy. Oh, it's unbelievable. Amber Barrett's goal gives Ireland the victory that they needed. There'll be no more playoffs. There'll be no more heartbreak because Ireland have finally done it. They have qualified for the 2023 World Cup Finals. What an unbelievable achievement by Vera Powell and her players up there with the great days in Irish sport. Wild celebrations out on the pitch. Emma Byrne is in tears.
I can't believe it.
Enjoy every moment of this.
We finally did it. We finally done it. And what a performance from the girls as well. We're not talking about the defensive performance, sitting off, not playing well, getting there by the skin of their teeth. They did it because they played absolutely brilliant in the first half. They were pure professional, defended excellently, and you can see heartbreak for the Scottish, but I'm sorry, we deserve this one.
They certainly do. It has been a fight every step of the way for so many Irish women over the last half a century when it came to Irish football. Scrapping, been turned down, been pushed away, been told what they couldn't do. Well, this group of players said enough is enough. And when you think back to Liberty Hall in 2019 and the stand that was taken by the woman beside me and so many players out on that pitch, it changed the course of Irish football history forever. And they have got their reward today. They are heading to the World Cup Finals. We cannot say it enough. Ireland are heading to the World Cup Finals. They have beaten Scotland by a goal to nil. Courtney Brosnan with the penalty save. Amber Barrett with the winning goal. It's one we'll be seeing for years and years to come. The Scottish are devastated. The Irish, I think, can't quite believe it. We're going to Australia. Surely.
No, there's no surely.
Screw you, accountants. You can't stop us now.